Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Okay, I believe we're on, folks.
Okay.
Are we there? Are we there?
Yeah, we are.
We're having a little technical issue this morning, so.
Is that, let me get started. That was the voice of the late Brian Brown, founder of the Brown Briefly. I do hope he knows somehow, somewhere, there is some afterlife that His much beloved Dodgers are one win away from the World Series title.
That's right.
They were robbed by the cheating Houston Astros in 2017. This is actually written by Michael Shook. So
yeah.
Let us hope that the forces of good combined with excellent baseball are the winners this time around. So Lynn is logging in. We're scrambling a little bit because the password was changed to the Brown Briefly, and so we're all coming in a little bit late on this.
Well, and actually, that was
security now.
That was really a good timing because the we were going to run a little bit over on our music from Les Mis today, so it actually is kind of working out. Sorry to say.
How was it changed?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Not to worry. We're on the air, guys.
We're all here, though.
Lynn, do you want to read the Election Day, November 1884 Walt Whitman poem, or do you have that?
If not, I don't have it. I'm sorry.
If not,
that was designated to Gail, but I could.
Well, Gail's not here, so I'll do it. Okay. If I should need, this is a poem written by Walt Whitman, November 1884. Entitled Election Day. If I should need to name, O Western world, your powerfulest scene and show, 'twould not be you, Nigeria, nor you, ye timeless prairies, or your huge rifts of canyons, Colorado, nor you, Yosemite, nor Yellowstone with its spasmic geyser loops ascending to the skies, appearing and disappearing, nor Oregon's white cones, nor Huron's belt of mighty lakes, nor Mississippi's stream. This seething hemispheric humanity is now, I'd name, the still small voice vibrating America's chosen day, choosing day. The heart of it, not the chosen, the act itself, the main, the quadriennial choosing. The stretch of north and south aroused, seaboard and inland, Texas to Maine, the prairie states, Vermont, Virginia, California, the final ballot shower from east to west, the paradox and conflict, the countless snowflakes falling, a swordless conflict. Yet more than all Rome's wars of old or modern Napoleon's, the peaceful choice of all, or good or ill humanity, welcoming the darker odds that draw us, foams and ferments the wine it serves to purify, while the heart's pants, life glows. These stormy gusts and winds waft precious ships, swelled Washington's, Jefferson's, Lincoln's sails.
Wow.
Wow.
It's all about the election of 1884, right?
It is, right.
Wow. Yeah. Could be the election this year.
Yep. Yeah, we now turn to Lynn Kerrigan for some key information regarding voting and registering to vote. Lynn outlines the key dates and other information for last-minute registration and voting.
Thank you, Bruce. I want to let everybody know that today is the day they recommend you send in your ballot by mail in order to let it get to the election office before the November 3rd election date. So I want to make sure that those of you have already received your ballots get them in the mail or the drop box, which is in front of our library. That drop box is picked up at least two times a day. And the elections office told me that was because there is record turnout. They are expecting in King County a 90% turnout, which 90%, is
90%.
90.
Wow. Wow.
Yes.
I have to tell you, when I dropped mine off, they had just emptied it. The vehicle was there with the carts and everything in it. And I watched, I think, three or four people come up to put their ballots in. And at least two of them, if not more, took selfies of themselves putting their ballot in the slot. Yeah.
I do want to mention that if you're not registered to vote, yesterday was the last day that you could register online. You can still register between today and November 3rd at these vote centers that they have set up in Seattle. You can always go to the King County Elections Office, which is at 919 Grady Avenue Southwest in Renton, and they have set up additional times for local centers to be open, CenturyLink Field, University of Washington, as well as in some outlying areas between Kenmore, Bothell, Kent, and Federal Way and Bellevue. So there's five additional places you could register between now and November 3rd. And you can also, you know, if you're registered, having to register on the last day of, the day that the ballots are due, you should be able to get your ballot right then and there and get it filled out and turned in. The odd thing that I think is the twist this year is that we always have been able to cast our ballots in Washington State up until the last, mail our ballots in. I'm sorry. We've been able to mail our ballots in by the day of the election, as long as it's postmarked by the day of the election. They're saying now they are so concerned that so many people are voting early that the election will be called before a lot of the absentee ballots may be checked, or the mail-in ballots, if they come in late. So get your make your vote count and get it in early. Mail it, get it in the drop box, and make your vote count. Thanks.
Let's have a shout out to Jennifer Harvey, co-owner of Island Queen, who hosted a voter registration event at the Island Queen yesterday. And we tried to get the word out about that. Because for those who are like not quite haven't got the paperwork yet, or hey, you know, somebody just relocated to Vashon, it was a great service. I really thank Jennifer for doing that great work.
No kidding. Plus, I thought we ought to appeal to be a vote center in the future because we're an outlying area. We can take on that challenge later, but it would be nice to have time set up. And I guess the vote centers are set up for Saturday and Monday before the Tuesday election, and also on that Tuesday, November 3rd.
And did we also know that there are people on Vashon across the entirety of King County who have agreed to be ballot drop box observers? And they're the ones who will go in, you know, jump into the breach if, you know, the ballot drop boxes are having problems, if they're jammed, things like that.
Or so, somebody tries to light a fire and throw it in.
Well, we shouldn't, spread too many ideas about it. But yeah, I mean, that certainly has happened. It's kind of disturbing how safe or unsafe those are. Most of the boxes, I understand, are in places that do have cameras, and so that they are able to be monitored. So that's a very important safety feature for us.
And Lynn, just for clarification, did you say 900 Grady Way, Renton?
919.
Okay.
919 Grady Way Southwest, Renton.
Okay, I just looked it up, and what you want to do if you're taking 405 would be to take the second South Center exit, the one that goes past South Center. You can take that one if you're heading eastbound, and it'll put you right on Southwest Grady Way. Or you can, oh, wait a minute, that's Southwest Grady Way. Oh, hang on a minute. I'm going to give you wrong information. You have to go on up to...
On the Renton Loop, True. Be careful.
Yeah. You have to go on up to the 167 exit. Sorry, that's the one you need to get. The 167 exit. And once you do that, head north on Rainier, and that'll put you on South Grady Way. So that should work.
Yeah, I can proudly say I'm a used to be known in the day as a Renton rat. So Renton High School is my old stomping grounds.
Ah, okay.
We got off to a little bit of a rough start this morning because they changed the password on it. So we're all coming in a little bit late. So you've been listening to the voice of Lynn Kerrigan, who grew up in the Deep South before journeying back to the far Pacific Northwest as an academic artist and provocateur. And Lynn gave us a sort of overview of election. And then you've also heard from Kevin Jones, who represents Indivisible Vashon, is our progressive activist, and now nationally known as a quote unquote volunteer as a result of all the postcards he sent out. So, Kevin, what's up this week with Indivisible Vashon and the week before the election?
You keep your eye on the Beachcomber this Thursday. It's a very important issue. We'll hear some of all those postcard writers on Vashon. It's just amazing. I think we had around 90 volunteers writing postcards over the last 3 or 4 years. So it's been a huge cumulative effort to get here. So Indivisible Vashon, we are planning an election watch gathering. And if you go out to indivisiblevashon.org, you'll find that. 6 o'clock until whenever on election night by Zoom, we'll be posting election results as they come in. So you can see our path to the White House and our path to the Senate and how we're doing. And then on November 4th, keep your eyes and ears open for events on Vashon to make sure that the votes are counted and that we can raise our voices if there's any delays in exercising that most fundamental of our democratic processes.
No. Great. Thanks, Kevin.
I am.
And finally joining us after a short sabbatical at Lopez and Orcas both. Is that correct, Gail?
Yes. I'm an island hopper.
Peripatetic poet, Gail Kellner. So, and Gail, I'm sorry you weren't able to log in on time. I ended up reading Walt Whitman, not very well, but I wanted to ask what you wanted to say about the Walt Whitman poem.
Oh, I just want to, well, first of all, thank you. It's quite a tongue twister. And Michael Shook and I had been discussing if we should perhaps shorten it down a little bit. But I'd like to, you read the entire thing, Bruce, already. I might just point out a couple of lines that I'm a big believer that poetry needs to be kind of digested slowly. And there was a couple lines that I really appreciated. And here's one of them from Walt Whitman. This is in 1884. It's election day, a blustery day from everything I gather from the poem. And he says, "The final ballot shower from east to west, the paradox and conflict, the countless snowflakes falling, a swordless conflict." And I think that is, for me, the line that stands out the most, because it's the world really didn't know anything like this prior to most of the world. I suspect there were parts and were ways that power transferred, but often power was transferred by force, not by a democratic vote. And he is, Walt Whitman waxes on about that, I think, in such a beautiful way.
He does.
And we can hope that it continues this year.
Yes, right. And then finally, the voice you just heard was that of our mood modulating sound engineer, Truman O'Brien, coming to us from the state of the art, bustling downtown Vashon, Jean Bosch studio, on this Tuesday morning, fresh from his morning scramble. Truman, what's up with you and your...
thanks for the intro. We had some excitement today too here on the scramble, because at 9:26 this morning we went off the air. No clear reason. We just were gone, and we were off the air for I think about 4 minutes. And Molly and I were scrambling pretty good here for a little while, and then pretty soon we got a hold of one of our tech guys, and next thing you know, we're back. So it was a a little bit of morning excitement for us today, and that consequently we ran over a little, and which actually worked out well since you guys didn't have the right password, and I apologize for that. I have no idea why that happened, but I will definitely look into it and figure out why.
Try and the mysterious workings of Voice of Vashon.
That's it.
Magic. Radio is magic to me. The idea that we can talk together and that is all sent over the airwaves all the time is magic. And I really appreciate your working with all those complications.
If you think that's magic, you have no idea, because the signal, listen to this, the signal goes from JBBS through the air over to the Station 55 cell tower. From there, it's sent to the top of the water tower at Water District 19. From there, it's sent to the cell tower at Sunrise Ridge, where it goes by landline into the Sunrise Ridge studios, is sent back up from there over to the water tower, and is broadcast from there. So that's how our signal gets out. It's a little complicated.
10 opportunities for it to go wrong.
Indeed, and that's one of the places where it happens. So there we go.
The true magic we need now is for all of us to concentrate really hard and bring Michael Shook in.
Exactly. I'll keep looking for him.
Briefly.
Did you get a hold of him okay, Lynn?
No, I called, but I had to leave a message on their voicemail.
Oh, okay.
He has received email. He says he attempted and didn't get there yet, so... Michael, come in.
Timed out if he had been entering an incorrect one. He'll be in a minute. That's what I told him.
Okay. Michael, if you can hear us.
Call Truman. He will give you the password.
All right. You can't just announce that on the air?
Probably wouldn't be a good idea. We might have lots of guests.
Well, he sent us his script. We could just kind of take the broad topics and give it a go.
Yeah, one of the interesting things about the 1884 election that we heard about in the Walt Whitman poem is it was the first time that Grover Cleveland was elected president. He was the 22nd president of the United States and was voted out of office and then became the 24th president of the United States. So he served two terms, but not consecutively. So what's the Brown briefly thought about Trump losing this time and coming back and winning in 2024?
He'll be in jail.
It has happened before.
That's a nightmare scenario is what I would say.
Well, my hope is that he will be in jail and will not be able to come back for a second term.
He'll be how old?
Doesn't seem to matter much these days. Gail.
I didn't want to talk over you, Kevin. I think that the blue wave is going to swamp his boat is what I believe. I do not think there is a comeback for that. So I am confident in that. I say that to mostly convince myself.
Now we've talked quite a bit. There's a Washington Protect the Results Coalition, and I'm happy that I am a member of it. If you haven't gone out to protecttheresults.com, go and check that out. ChooseDemocracy.us, check that out. We've talked about what are the threats of this, not peaceful transition of power. And the thought that occurs to me is that the election could very well be that everybody will see it's clear, right, that he is not winning. Because the turnout is huge. There's tremendous energy in the country. But, that won't dissuade him. I don't think it matters how many people see it the real way. He's going to see it as he's the winner. So I do think we need to make sure to raise our voices that say, yeah, we can see the data. It's time for you to plan to go.
Well, I keep reporting from all my my good right-wing friends that but they're posting things on Facebook of parades. And I mean, there's one that was like 8 miles long of cars with Trump banners and, the whole works. And they were saying it was going both directions, like for 8 miles. So, could be interesting.
Well, Texas is certainly a stronghold of Trump support, probably one of the biggest strongholds of Trump support. So although, you know, of course, they have the right and should vote as they see best, I think the rest of the country sure is trending blue.
It is, you know, I just went out and took a look at the, I mean, there's lots of measures, one of which is on 538.com is the his popularity, Trump popularity. And it dropped when he caught the virus. And then it sort of has been rebounding up until a couple of weeks ago. And now it's on the decline again. So, you know, there's those macro measures. And then there's the details of which battleground state, and what's the polls. But yeah, the trend is very much that we're ready for change.
And hopefully that will work across cities where a lot of the Democratic voters are clustered, I think. And I think it's sort of well known that a lot of the major cities go fairly Democratic most of the time. And hence all of the concern about the swing states because of the Electoral College, some of the states with a much smaller populations still have representation that can throw elections. And I know that Indivisible Vashon and the Biden campaign have really been focusing on Pennsylvania and Ohio and Florida, and looks like Arizona may be headed towards possibly a swing state. So, you know, it's a complex time.
Also, I mean, you got to remember that the American democracy and constitutional system was set up to not change rapidly. I mean, the very nature of our constitutional structure is to have allow change, but not to have change be, you know, very rapid. That's why you have 6-year terms for senators. That's why you have lifetime appointments for Supreme Court justices. And at times like these, when many of us feel like we need change and we need change now, our system's not really set up for that. And so what we have to ask ourselves, are we willing to live with a system that was designed 250 years ago and seems to work fairly well in ways? I mean, it certainly has its limits, but it has continually sort of ticked toward that statement in the Declaration of Independence, you know, that we believe all men are created equal. You know, and we've still got a long way to go, but we've come a long way in 250 years. So the question is, you know, are we ready to abandon that structure and move to something that's more more amenable to quicker change? Or are we willing to live with that kind of constitutional system that's structured to sort of modulate the waves of change, if you will? Kevin, your thoughts?
Well, you know, it's a really intriguing way to look at it with the institutions that create durability. You know, the notion of us all having to change policies every time we change leaders, I don't think is appealing to too many people. At the same time, you know, the world has been accelerating, changing, and certainly is probably going to keep a pace doing that. In the meantime, you know, we just appointed a 40-something-year-old justice, 30-something-year-old justice who will be on the bench, Supreme Court bench, for a generation. And so just one of those other items that just continues to perpetuate longstanding belief systems, which you know, may or may not keep up with where the populace really is.
So that does bring up the question, though. They were talking, I mean, people have been talking about, you know, putting an 18 or 20-year limit on Supreme Court justices. How would that happen, Bruce? Would that be an amendment to?
No, it's actually an act of Congress. Okay. Congress controls the Supreme Court. I mean, the Constitution is fairly vague about the Supreme Court. It creates the Supreme Court. But it doesn't designate the number of justices. We've had anywhere from 5 to 12 justices in the past. In the 1880s, I believe, sort of mid-1880s, they moved to 9 justices. And so it's been that way for 140, 50 years. But The Constitution doesn't demand that. Constitution doesn't limit Supreme Court justices' terms. I mean, the Congress can change that. So, so there are ways that it can be dealt with. And the question is the whole federal court structure and the Supreme Court working in a kind of society that we have today? I mean, it was set up in a sort of pre-industrial, agricultural society. We're now in a very different world, and does the court system serve that world as well as it could? Maybe the whole court system needs to be expanded. The regional sort of courts need to be expanded. And more of them, more justices, not necessarily on the Supreme Court, but at the lower court level. Those are all legitimate questions. And those are questions I think Joe Biden addressed when he said he's going to put together a commission to look at the justice system in the United States and come up with recommendations. I think the Republicans are sort of railing against packing the court, but court's been packed before when it had 12 members and it once had 5 members. So, there's no sort of, it's not written in stone. If you're an originalist, as Comey Barrett seems to be, there's nothing in the original Constitution that limits Congress sort of structure of the Supreme Court.
Well, and restructuring the court system in general, one of the things would be to improve the speed that things move through this. I mean, I think it moves at a snail's pace now, doesn't it? I mean, if you go to an appellate court, it takes forever to get heard. And
yeah, so, right.
I'm sorry, Gail, I didn't mean to step on you there.
Mm-hmm. Right. I had a question for Bruce. Bruce, could you speak a little bit more at length about, does it take both the Congress and the Senate to change the number of Supreme Court justices? Or are you using Congress to mean both or just one?
Both. I believe it picks both, yeah.
Okay.
I'll have to research it more, but the quick read I did is Congress, so the House and the Senate together set up the court system. And then the House is what funds the court system. So that's my understanding.
Go ahead.
Oh, finish your thought.
I just found something really interesting by Howard Zinn, a little quote regarding the court system. Now, of course, he wrote this, he passed away a number of years ago now, 10, 15 even, but he said, "Don't despair about the Supreme Court." I'm quoting him. He says, and for our listeners who might not know who Howard Zinn is, he is a well-known historian who tended to look at the parts of history that weren't printed in the school books. So do not depend on courts. And he says they have courts follow the will of the people. When people stand up with through dire action or direct action, and they push the poor women and people of color for the rights of the poor women and people of color, the courts follow.
Yeah, part of my sense is that the Supreme Court changes people. The originalist argument is it a legitimate legal theory? I don't think I don't personally agree with it, but you can certainly see how the argument holds up. But, I'm always reminded of Earl Warren. Earl Warren was the governor of California. Earl Warren was one of the leaders pushing for internment of Japanese during World War II, overriding their civil rights, American citizens being imprisoned in concentration camps. And within 10 years, he was the lead voice on Brown versus the Board of Education. So people change, not that Barrett necessarily will change, but, the Supreme Court puts people in a very different position in terms of looking at their responsibilities as citizens and as jurists. And so, I'm concerned about Barrett's nomination, but I'm also optimistic that, there are ways that you can deal with that, the poison pill idea that has been run around. originalists are locked into this concept of indivisibility in legislation, so that you can't declare just one part of it, of a legislation unconstitutional. It applies to all of that legislation if it's linked and written that way. So certainly you can write legislation. Congress, if it were a Democratic Congress, could write legislation in a way that the Supreme Court, if they invalidated, would invalidate things that conservatives would be abhorrent at invalidating. And so there are ways to deal with it, but it's a workaround rather than dealing with it directly. Lynn.
Well, I was going to say, I think there's some things coming up to the Supreme Court that are being acted on pretty quickly right now that we'll see how the new juror responds, because the Supreme Court just on 1026 ruled that the Wisconsin ballots had to be received by Election Day. They had appealed that because of COVID and their elector ballot submission changing, that they didn't know if they could be successful in getting all their ballots in fast enough in the old way. And the Supreme Court has ruled that they have to be in by Election Day. On November the 10th, the Affordable Care Act is coming up before the Supreme Court. And that apparently was part of the reason that Amy Coney Barrett has been kind of rushed through and put on the bench so that she can be part of that discussion. Mm-hmm. And the census is coming up on November 30th about who can be excluded for counts, mm-hmm. That will affect the Electoral College, the funding, other districting maneuvers that have to be done. So it is pretty important, mm-hmm. especially when the Senate doesn't do anything to mm-hmm. balance the president when he goes outside of his mm-hmm. scope of power. Gail.
I was just going to say, and not to be a Pollyanna about this, but the upside of the Affordable Care Act being overturned is I think it opens the door wide open for a single payer system. I think there will be so much loss, so much outrage. So I think the problem with not with pre-existing condition, particularly anyone that's had COVID, millions of people at this point, I think that it's a bumpy road, but I think that could potentially open the door. So it could be terrible and awful, but also perhaps good.
Well, I think that's being called the public option now, because Biden is not intentionally going for universal health care through the government like Medicare. He is a centrist, and he is going for the option for those who aren't employed, for example, to be able to get insurance through the state at perhaps a cheaper price than the private market might offer it. So it's not an either or, it's a both.
And Gail, that argument about healthcare, if Affordable Act care is overturned, that it actually forces then action. And the same thing goes with Roe versus Wade. I mean, if Roe versus Wade is overturned, it throws you back to where Ruth Bader Ginsburg was saying that Roe versus Wade is a stopgap. What needs to take place is legislation that enshrines within law the rights of women to control their body. So, Kevin?
Well, I was also going to hearken to Gail's, I guess I would put it in the context of my theory of change, which means that you have to have a level of dissatisfaction. If you're not dissatisfied, nothing changes. You have to understand how to, what better looks like, and you have to be guaranteed or confident you have a path to get from where you are to where you'd like to be. And I believe in that system. I also believe we need a democracy that's really representative of the people in the democracy. And the challenge that I think we're seeing played out in front of us, if you read the book Democracy in Chains, is by an attempt by the very wealthy to reduce the amount of the democratic system responsiveness to the people in the system and to prioritize those who have the wealth to really dictate how the governance runs. And part of that is Citizens United and the amount of money that those corporations can now put into swaying elections. The courts, which we're seeing now, is to help create a bulwark against changes that the progressive change like we're talking about will be harder to achieve. So I think it's a dilemma. I'd love to think the democratic system works, that'll move toward where the people want it to go. But I think that is being challenged as we speak.
Yet it's important to remember that the very structure of the American government began with people of property having the rights and people without property not having rights. So it's very deeply ingrained within the American constitutional political structure. What has changed is the society has changed around that. And the question is whether or not we can change that structure to be more amenative to the needs of larger groups of people and people without wealth. And that's the struggle that's going on right now, I think, in the American political system and the divide that you see in the American political system. Yeah. Gail?
I'm going to say something that I haven't heard anybody talk about this, but it's occurred to me that that very thought, Bruce, that you've brought up, that even the right to vote was tied to wealth, was tied to property ownership. What if we take that off? What if we had a system by which we voted, but it wasn't place-based, other than the United States itself, but we take away this idea that it's a place-based system, that you get to control it based on where you live? And I don't have an answer specifically of how that would work, but I do think that it's an idea, because even now, you know, Kevin, for example, the work that you've done, you're trying to convince people in other states that have, you know, small populations generally, but oversized weight to throw around. So just a thought. I'm curious what any of you think about that.
Well, what's interesting is in the Supreme Court decision that Lynn referenced about the Wisconsin voting, that's because the Constitution gives all the powers of elections to the states, not to the federal government. That could be changed. I mean, in other democracies around the world, the federal system, usually independent bodies within the federal system, run elections nationwide, so that there is not this sort of diversity. I mean, in the United States, there's some, 2,500 counties, 2,500 counties that run elections differently. Each one runs it differently. And then many of those counties are so big urban areas or spread out areas, is that they have sub areas. So there's probably 3,000 to 4,000 different electoral systems in the United States. In places like Germany, you know, Great Britain, Australia, New Zealand, there's one electoral system. So and it's possible. It can be done legislatively.
I think that the other aspect of kind of what's going on is the cycles that seem to happen as wealth and the management of wealth changes. You know, we are right now at a historic 1890s level of wealth inequity, and where the regulations have been kind of taken away from how people manage their wealth, such that there's a lot of dark money, you know, money that we can't see flowing through PACs into the electoral system. I know that the Dodd-Frank Act, which was a banking regulation act that was passed prior to or after the 2008 recession, is being messed with a little bit now, which would then take some controls away from bankers. Bruce.
Yep. Well, we only have about a minute and a half left. So before we cut off for today, let's sort of go around. Truman, who's going to win next Tuesday?
No, boy, don't go there. And I mean, I was being pretty confident. I mean, being in this liberal part of the world, you hear a lot of the blue state, and like, oh yeah, Biden's got it in the bag. But boy, I don't know. The more I watch the my friends on Facebook, I'm not so sure. I think it's going to be a tighter race than we expect. Maybe like the last time, you know.
Lynn, what do you think?
Well, I think Biden's going to take it. I think the difficulties with the polls are that a lot of people don't speak to the polls. We don't know what the polls mean. I don't think that we should do anything other than hope that kindness and decency will win out over assholery.
Is that one of the seven words?
I don't think so, but I really like that one. I mean, that's a good word.
All right. Yeah. Kevin, what are your thoughts about next Tuesday?
Well, of course, you know what the outcome we all want, but I was really encouraged by the numbers of youth vote. I'm really encouraged by the numbers of early voting. If that's an indication of a larger electorate, then Moody's Analytics, for example, said that would be a good sign that Biden would indeed win. But we need to process all the ballots, and we need to count all the votes. So if we do that, I believe that we'll see Joe and Kamala in the White House.
Right. Gail, what's your thoughts?
Well, I'm not too honestly worried. I think Biden and Harris will take the election. I think that the difficulty is getting Trump out of office and the few rough ride for a few months until the inauguration. What do you think, Bruce, before we go?
Well, I was going to ask Susan. Susan's in the studio there next to Truman. Susan, what are your thoughts about next Tuesday?
I kind of share Truman's trepidation, and I'm hoping that there's a blue tsunami that is large enough to overtake the power of the Electoral College and that Biden and Harris get into office. And I share, I believe it was Gail who said our biggest issue is going to be getting Trump out of office afterward. What happens after November 3rd? What happens after November 10th? Because we're probably not even going to know till then.
Stay tuned for the reality TV show.
See you all next week.